World War II, a time of unrelenting global trauma, stretching from 1939 to 1945. It involved all of the great powers of the time. It was the most destructive episode in the history of civilization. It required its major forces to dedicate their entire military, economic, industrial, and scientific capabilities to the cause of warfare. Estimates of the death toll vary, from 50 million to 85 million worldwide. World War II took the art of war to new and appalling heights through massacre, genocide, remorseless bombing raids, starvation, disease, and the first use of nuclear weapons. It helps to be self-sufficient and enterprising if you want to make a go of it in the armed forces. Stanley Hill, known as Sandy, had the right qualities in abundance. In his youth, he'd made some useful cash by selling rabbits he'd trapped and by acting as MC at country dances. Then, on enlisting for war service, he turned to motor mechanics, serving in No. 151 Australian General Transport Company and putting into practice the skills he'd first developed on the family farm at Scott Creek in the Adelaide Hills.
Yeah, mixed farm. Hobby farm, you call it now.
Right.
In those days, you just made a living on it. That was it.
And your father said to you, look, we could live on how much? Wasn't a lot of money, was it?
On £50 a year.
You live on £50 a year and just be self-sufficient,
yeah,
in other respects.
Absolutely. You've got your own vegetables, fruit, killed a couple of pigs the other year for meat. Only thing you bought was a few groceries and bread.
Were you a big family?
Only three of us, two boys and a girl. The girl was the oldest.
And what about schooling? Where did you go to school, Sandy?
All, everything, from the time I started to finish in Scotts Creek. One teacher to seven grades.
Right. So you started at the age of, say, five.
Yeah.
And you went to the local school, the one teacher school, until what age?
14.
14. And after that?
Back home and work. For nothing.
What did you learn in those days? What skills did you learn? I know you're a very good handyman.
I hated the bookwork part of it, but I loved woodwork. And the last 6 months, because my birthday was on in July, and the last 6 months, the teacher said to me, look, I know you hate all this bookwork, but you can go out in the woodwork room and do what you like, but you have to a couple of days teach the grade ones and twos.
Really? So you did some teaching?
Yeah, well, I didn't know much myself, really, but we got by.
Good on you.
I finished up with the most wood models that was ever made in that woodwork room in, well, up until the time I left, anyway.
So you taught the children some practical skills.
Well, phase one and two was, yes, really teach them the alphabet and how to write it and so forth. It was interesting, but I was still rather than outside in that woodwork.
I guess one of the things that intrigued me, you're known as Sandy, and the RSL knows you as Sandy, but you've got a magnificent head of white hair. You're 97 years of age. Have you ever had red hair? Is that where Sandy comes
from?
No.
Just that my father was a Scotsman. He came out in 1875 with his parents. And in 1896, my grandfather died, and he was the first one in the Scotts Creek Cemetery.
Right.
And he had to wait 6 years for a mate.
Okay. And on the farm, then, you left school at 14. What skills did you learn then? I guess you could drive a tractor, you could do all
that. Oh, you never had tractors in them days.
Never a tractor.
No, nobody had a tractor. No, oh hell, there was no, not in the gardens.
Right.
There was quite a few vegetable gardens in the area. That I know when the first bloke bought a tractor, and that wasn't until after the war.
Right.
They all pretty had gone mad.
So you had the horse?
Yeah, horse and learned to swear.
And a house cow, I suppose?
Yeah, we had about four cows.
Right.
We used to send the cream away.
So you learned to ride a horse, you learned to milk a cow,
yeah.
You learned to slaughter animals, I suppose?
Yeah, yeah. Kill them and dress them.
Yep.
And then, you'd for pork, you'd have bread and bacon the whole year round.
Yep, right. So, that was a hard working life.
Well, it was a different life. Was, yes. You know, you'd done what you have to, and nobody sort of tried to boss you around. But things were absolutely different. If you wanted to go and get a rabbit in somebody else's place, you went and got it, you know, or mushrooms and that sort of thing. But after the war, it all changed because new people coming in.
Take you back though to the 1930s. I see you were born on the 19th of July 1920. So come the 1930s, you'd left school. What did you do for recreation?
Well, nothing much except cricket.
Yeah.
Used to play in the local cricket team, and I did play tennis for a while, but then there wasn't enough people around to make the team up. Cricket was all right, but the tennis didn't go for that long because you never had enough people.
Tell me about your cricket. Did you open the bowling or the batting?
Oh, a bit of each.
Yeah.
Yeah, nothing spectacular, but, we won the cup.
Right.
And,
what league was that? What did they call it?
Oh, well, it was the Hills Cricket Association.
Hills Cricket Association, all right.
Yeah.
Did you ever go into town to see Bradman?
No. I never went to town until I got my first set of sports teeth.
Right, okay.
I was only 14, I know, but that's the first time I'd even gone to town, and I don't think I ever went again until during the war.
Gosh, you lost your teeth early, Sandy. What?
fighting.
Fighting?
Well, in those days, the teacher we had, he was a war neurosis bloke. He gassed, and he didn't believe in anything but that cane.
Right.
And he built hell out there. And we had desks in those days, one seat right through, and four or five kids, and you couldn't get out unless somebody else got out, that sort of thing. And he'd come along and grab you by the ears and shake you all out of you. Oh, he was but in the end he got his dues. Ken Fenton, it was a state for him. I don't know whether he was deformed or something, but he had a humpback, real humpback. And first he was belting him one day, or going to, and he up and hit him. Knocked the piece down and then he walked. And as we're going out of the schoolyard, there's two fence posts with a fence around the yard, and there's a wire across the top about chest high, so you could duck under, you know. Anyone underneath, please hit him. In the act of him getting flattened, he lost his belt, come over, the strides were coming down, And he still chased the penalty, but in the end, he gave up.
Mr. Priest was the teacher.
Yeah.
And so he built a junior. Did you build him back as well?
No, I never. I was there. All day, yeah. Gets 4 or 5 games every morning.
Now, what about girlfriends in those days and going to country dances and things?
Never thought of.
Really?
Yeah. No, I know. It was just to say, mum and anyone that went around, if you see a girl's dress blown up, look the other way.
Yeah, all right.
Yeah, all you'll have done that sort of business.
They didn't have the 50-50 dance at the hall or anything
No. I don't think we ever had a concert with that teacher. Mm. When we got the next teacher, because I'd left school by then, they were putting on concerts, and the kids would have a concert every year.
Let's take you through a bit. See, 1920, war broke out in 1939. You were 19 years of age, working on the farm?
Yeah, well, I'm still on that. I used to do some odd little jobs to get some money from outside.
Yeah.
I'd get up in the morning, and I even did that when I went to school, get some rabbit traps, and go and get some rabbits and clean them and sell them.
Sell them, yeah.
For sixpence each.
Yeah. And where would you sell those?
Locals around.
Yeah, good.
Yeah. And, that was all right, because many a time, and we'd go to the dances and that, and brother and myself, and sometimes you never had a shilling to get in, so you just waited till half time.
Slipped in.
Yeah.
So you were going out to social events and local dances when you were sort of 19, 20, that's
it? Yeah, I think I went to my first dance when I was about 18.
Right. And where was that? Was
Scotts Creek.
Okay.
And I missed 2 dances.
Yeah.
From there on the hill, I don't think I missed a dance anywhere.
So you met some girls, got girlfriends with that, did you?
Oh, well, them days, you take a girl home now and again if, it wasn't you'd have had the money to, the woman used to come to the dances and she'd make up pies and pasties. And so you'd go out there for 6 months, you'd get a drink and a pasty. you couldn't shout anyone because you never had the money.
Right. What was your favourite dance? Quickstrot, set Foxtrot, or Pride of Erin?
Pride of Erin, I used to call the Elvis, who I was MC for years after that. Mainly, just the modern dances them days.
So from quite a young age you were acting as MC? Good on you.
Well, my first job, if you can call it a job, and the hall was within a couple of 100 yards of where we lived. And they gave me the job of cleaning and looking after the floor, getting ready for the dance and all that. it was for £1 a year.
Good on you. So you'd be up there, gentlemen take your partners for the bar dance, or the gentlemen's excuse me, that sort of thing?
Yeah, excuse me, and the foxtrot, the quick step, shotties.
Can you remember now what you used to say?
Oh, I won't say anything. gentlemen, please take your partners for the whatever. And, everything was pretty good, except at that stage before the war, if you went to a dance and there wasn't a fight on, it wasn't a dance. there'd be a fight somewhere.
And it'd be about a girl, I guess.
Oh, yes. Oh, yeah. I was outside. Yeah. Somebody would get too drunk to look after themselves. Huh. I remember when I was a kid, I suppose I was 10, and from where we was living to the hall is a gully. And this night, hell of a lot of noise coming from the hall. I'm only about 10, still home. And anyway, when I woke up next morning, I looked up and on the side of the hill in the nature scrub, there's clothes, there's coats, and there's all sorts of things, clothing sort of thing. And about half an hour later, in come four blokes, and they've got an axe and a maul and wedges. And what the hell are they going to do? This is what I'm thinking. And anyway, they go down this lovely great log that has been laying on the side deal there for many years, I suppose. And they split it up and they get a bloke out because he cops had picked him up. Of course, they only had a horse and cart in them days. And they'd push him in one side and he'd go through the canvas in the back and out. He got down to this log apparently and he couldn't get out. He said, stayed there all night.
Hardy. And what about marriage? Was this on your mind at all?
I never got married when I was in the army.
Right.
I'd been going with Orange for a couple of years, I suppose. I mean, I never had enough money to do anything. And, anyway, in 21.
Right.
So that was 1939, I think, we got married. 1940, because I was in the army.
Now, I've got to put these records right here because I looked you up on the Australian War Memorial site and they've got you as enlisting in 1943.
43. Well, I was there in the army
for me 21st birthday. Well, there we are. We better put that right. You're only 21 when you enlisted. Yes.
Yeah.
We'll have to get that.
I think I was only 20, really.
Only 20.
It'd been 21st birthday in the army because Irish gave me a watch. And I lost the damn thing. It broke immensely.
Right.
And
So Iris was your wife?
Yeah, Iris May Dennis.
D-E-N-N-I-S. And where did you get married?
In Woodville Hall. Woodville.
Right.
Hall, yeah.
How did you meet Iris then?
She came to work for a bloke that he had 7 kids in 7 years. And every time that they had a kid, she would come up and look after them, rest of them while the woman went and had another one.
Gotcha. So she came out from town up to the Scotts Creek area and looked after this fellow with 7 children.
Yeah.
Family of 7 children.
Yeah.
Right, okay. And you met her. How did you meet? Without?
Well, actually, I went out rabbiting on the Saturday. And as we're coming back home, I had to pass the house that she was in. And she said, this rough look of
right.
Anyway, and then she came to the dance, you see, and there on, as I was, I'm not bragging, but I was pretty well dance mad, you know.
Yeah. And you had the last waltz together and walked her home.
Yeah.
Good man. Okay.
Went with her for another 2 years and then got married when I was in the army.
All right, so you lived in the army and you were just Still 20 when you enlisted, which is
very
young. Okay.
Yeah.
What were your motivations? Well, why did you want to enlist?
Oh, well, everybody else was going. And, I think the fact that they were taken blanks in the militia.
Yep.
And I said, well, I'm not going to be told what to do. So I just went and joined up.
Good on you. Okay. Now, so you listed, it's got your locality as being Pennington, South Australia, when you enlisted. I don't know what that is.
Yeah, well, that's where Horace is. See, when we got married, well, although I used to go back to Scotts Creek, she was working at Hendon. So I was in the army, and that was it.
Okay, so your first impressions of the military, you served at the time of your discharge, it was the 151st Australian General Transport Company. What about the very, and you're down as a driver, what about the first days of military service? Where did you enlist and who with?
I was on my own actually, I enlisted, but I went into Cheltenham Race Course.
Yep.
I don't know just how long we spent there, but we were there for the training mainly. And then we went to Gawler?
Yep.
Can't think of the name. It's down a bit from Cheltenham.
Warragul.
Yeah, we went to Warragul, and that's when the 7th Divy came back. We were down on the wharf, and I had the job of starting the trucks off, all the trucks that were coming off, get them started. And I had the breakdown, and another night with me. We actually slept down there for 2 or 3 days while they were unloading.
So you were a driver back then?
I was an MT mechanic.
MT mechanic, okay, Were you in the... What corps were you in?
6th Divy ASC.
Okay, thank you. And you were unloading trucks, you're doing all sorts of jobs like that for...
Oh, well, they sent me to a school and I got the motor mechanics ticket.
Right.
And then when I got back to camp, they already had their quota, so they said, you better go back to school and learn the electrical part of the motor.
Yep.
So they gave me that, and then I got that easy enough. And from there on, I don't know, I had a charm on.
Did you?
Oh, yeah. Every time they wanted to send a mob out to, perhaps in Pattaya, I could explain it better. They would send out, say, 10 or 15 trucks and mobilise them out in the forest somewhere. And then I'd go out with all the drivers, and get all these trucks going. They'd do silly things. They'd put them up. The diff was up on a log. Of course, when you start the thing up, the wheels would go around with you going nowhere. Or else they'd take a few spare parts out of the motor and had to find out which was what. It taught me a lot. And not only that, was out in the bivouac area, perhaps for 4 weeks sometimes. I remember one lot we had, was on some river, and on the opposite side of the river was a winery. So I went down there, looked around, and there's a boat there, and hell, it didn't look too. So then three or four of us lad got in it, over to the winery. They gave us plenty of wine, but that was only half-brewed. Terrible stuff.
Oh, dear.
And then on the way back, we're in this boat, it's only a little dinghy, and it's starting to sink. Of course, the other blokes had that much today. Useless, you know, they were half chicken, or well, truly chicken. And anyhow, we got back, and then a couple of days later, we all went back to camp again.
And whereabouts did that take place? Where is that winery?
It was somewhere out of Pakapanya.
Oh, yeah.
We went down there, or I took the breakdowns from Gawler. We went from Fort Warrendale to Gawler for about a month, I suppose.
Right.
And I had I was working in the workshop in the main street. We took over the workshop, you know. And that was a good, nice show because we parked on the race course at Gawler.
Yep.
And, it was, I don't know, I had a child life. Every time they wanted to do something outside of the camp, I got to take in charge of it sort of thing.
Did you get any rank out of this?
Not at the time. Mm. I did get one stripe at one stage, but that was up in New Guinea.
Tell us about New Guinea then, because this came in a bit later.
Yeah.
You've done all this specialist work. You're a highly trained engineer and driver. You obviously knew your mechanics very well.
Well, the army mechanics is not like being in the garage.
Right.
It's you do the things that you can do without much equipment. And if you can't do it, well, it goes into workshops and
gotcha.
They have a go.
Yeah, they'd send it off to the Raimi, wouldn't they?
Yeah, well, when we got to New Guinea, I think there was headquarters, A platoon, B, C, and workshops.
Yep.
And, of course, each crowd, perhaps 150 to 100 people, in each section, and there were drivers section, and they just hauled trucks and so forth.
So you got on a boat to go to New Guinea, is that right?
Yeah.
Where did you board?
We boarded at Townsville.
Right.
No, we boarded at Brisbane. We got to Townsville, and we had to wait there for about a fortnight.
Yep.
And then we went to New Guinea, and for some reason, about 12 months, they gave me leave to come back to Adelaide.
Really?
Yeah. I don't know why I got it, because, it was pretty tough going.
Let me just take you back, though. When you'd come from country South Australia, you'd done a lot of work out of the bush in Australia, fixing trucks, all sorts of things, highly trained mechanic. Then you got on the boat transport up to New Guinea. Where did they take you precisely up there? Where did you go to when you landed?
We landed actually at Buna.
Yep.
But from Buna, we released right down to Dobbinger of Salamar. Practically down, we couldn't get to Mel Bay.
Right.
Although I called in there on my way home for a leave and that. But from Buna to Salamar, there would have been about a mile of swamp, which is only, perhaps 2 feet deep at the deepest. And they shot all the coconut trees down and just put a pile of them up like a road over.
I got you. So can you remember when that was? Was that about 43, 44?
It'd be 43.
When you got New Guinea.
Yeah.
And your first year there, and you were doing all this work, and you had convoys, you were explaining to me about road making and convoys. Were you under attack at all from the Japanese?
Well, I mean bombing raids. We never actually done any fighting ourselves. We lost, in the first raid I know, we lost about six, I reckon it was six altogether.
What did you do when the bombers came over when you were being struck? What happened?
All sorts of things happened. I remember my mate, Evan Evans, the first thing you do when you get to the jungle, you dig yourself a pit.
Yep.
A pile of toilet.
Yep.
And you got a log on across the top to sit on, and that's it. And when the first blaster came, Evans went straight into that. It had been used.
Oh dear.
Well, by that time we'd gone to Lae.
Yep.
And back on the same thing, except they, instead of me being in workshops, they gave me a section, B section.
Right.
And so I set up a ramp and a place where I could service the trucks or do minor repairs, right. Mainly.
You'd be made up for Lance Corporal by the stage?
No. Actually, I was the major flight. Go back to you should have this book, is it? We're inside. When we went to Lae, we were put on the Bitterbum River,
mm-hmm.
And one night there was no rain where we were, as the flood came down the river, and we're floating in about 4 foot of water. And we got out of that, so they sent us around on this strip. I don't know what it was ever made for, but it's a strip of perhaps a mile long, and wouldn't be half a mile wide, but it'd be very close. And we sat up there. And but to get there, we had to get a mile of jungle.
Yep.
And so the lads, and I didn't get in that, but all the lads there cut the trees down, build them up, and loads of dirt on them, and that was the mad mile.
I see, okay.
And I'm racing out one night, because they gave me a jeep, and there's a breakdown somewhere, the major was coming in, and we sort of went to pass one another at the entrance to this bloody mad mile. He went over in the mud, and I kept going. And he called me in, and he says, "You're going to lose your stripe."
Yeah.
I said, "Well, it's no bloody good to me anyway, because of the mechanical certificates I had going, I was getting more money than what I was getting with the stripe."
Right, right. And he did take it off you?
Yeah.
A bit mean.
I didn't mind. He was good to me, really, because while I'm there, an old bloke who was leaving the joint, he said, "Why don't you take my business on?" And I, "What's that?" "Oh, I'm making rock."
In Grog?
Yeah. And anyway, he showed me how to make it. And all it was a four-gun petrol tip with a condensed belt tip soldered bolted to the one hole on the top, and a hose out of that, and the cap on the other side, and a 40-gallon drum. And whatever you get, throw it in the drum, doesn't go wrong, and then pull off the proceeds. Take it out.
Yeah.
Up to 60 degrees, you get all your alcohol. And after that, you get it's too weak. So, anyhow, I fixed this still up the way we went. I was making, perhaps 10, 14 bottles of shot. The Yanks were buying it for £5 a bottle.
The Yanks were buying it for £5 a bottle.
Yeah.
And it was very high proof, I suppose.
I remember the time when I came back a few years later, I was down here, and it came on TV, and this boat making this stuff, exactly as I was doing.
Yeah.
And they warned that you dare not drink it as it is. It'll kill you.
So was it a wine? What was it exactly?
It's a pure alcohol.
Pure alcohol.
Put it on a plate or something, put a match to it, you could not see it burn.
Through natural fermentation, I suppose.
Yeah. I mean, put your hand there, you knew it was still alive.
So, you knew the war was coming to an end, you took another boat, came back with a company to Brisbane.
Oh, yeah.
And
we got in the train at Brisbane,
yep.
And I think there's a 40-gallon drum of white paint there somewhere. Somebody found it and started to paint the train. But then they took off, I think, every station down from there to Brisbane. Somebody had walked in a 5-gallon keg or something.
Yep.
The publicans around the town, we got out of a good, welcome back in.
Yeah, nation showed its gratitude.
Yeah.
And so then you came back to South Australia and had a few more weeks to put in before.
Yeah, well, then I see. I put in for leave so I could come home and do a bit of work and prune the apple trees and that sort of thing. I think I said something about picking the fruit, but you can't pick fruit at that time of the year. But I didn't know.
I didn't.
So then I had about 3 months at home, and then I went back in and got debunked and discharged. That was it.
You're in pretty good shape, were you?
I was in hospital with dengue fever.
Yep.
They thought it was something else. And I know the nurse, I hadn't been in the toilet for about 6 days, and the nurse come and slept with me just about. And then they give me a bougie, and that was it.
You didn't have malaria?
No, I had dengue fever.
Yeah, all right. Now, and then you and Iris had to start your civilian life.
Yeah.
Post-war. So what do you do?
Come back and roof in the garden and took the garden over. But that was for about 55, must be nearly 5 years. But times have changed.
Yep.
Instead of the hills, Adelaide Hills supplying the market, they were bringing them in from Port Augusta area up the river, and they could grow 10 acres where we could only grow an acre.
Yep.
And it just, and the properties were too small anyway. So then I'm starting to build a house got all the trees and cut them down and got them sawed up, and then I started making bricks and built the house anyway. In 55, 52, there was a bushfire come through, and Lofty Park was burned out completely, the house and all.
And so you lost your house?
No, Lofty Park.
Oh, sorry.
It's an 80-acre park.
Right.
It's in Scotts Creek.
Yep.
Not the top end. But anyway, they rang up next door there because we never had a phone. And they said, would I like to go up and interview the bloke at the park on the Saturday morning. So I went up there. I had no clue what was going on. And they said, would you like to take the park over and rebuild it? So,
right. So can you spell what?
L-O-F-T-I-A.
Loftier Park. Okay.
Yeah,
and go on.
Anyway, I said, well, I'm building a dairy for a bloke over at Iron Bank. I said, I can't let him down. I'll come up every, because the swimming pool was still all right. And the people would come in, and so they said, well, do weekends. And I'd done that for a month. And then they sent the caravan up and we moved in.
So what was Loftier Park exactly?
It was a sports park, really.
Yes, okay. And, accommodation grounds?
No, it was 12 tennis courts.
Oh, yeah.
Couple of ovals and the swimming pool, but the the swimming pool was only open for 12 months because it was built in 1930. I've got the original book when they started this Lockyer Park. It was built by the local people. They got £2.08 a week,
yeah.
£1 had to go for a debenture.
Gotcha.
Which they lost anyway.
So, and where was it located exactly then, Loftier Park?
It's actually Scotts Creek.
Right.
It's on the border, you might say, between Scotts Creek and Heathfield.
I got you. Okay. And this was a general sort of community and recreation centre for the region.
Yeah, walking trails, walking tracks, and I'd do a bit of fire, clearing up for fire breaks and all that.
Well, I'm just reading about your fire service. You served the country fire service for more than 30 years. You were president of the local CFS, Scotts Creek, is that?
Yeah.
No, that's for a long time.
Longwood Badley Scotts Creek Fire,
And you were a member of the Scotts Creek Progress Association, president for 18 years?
Yeah.
God, you did a lot that region.
Well, it's just one of those things that nobody, if you want to keep this place going, you've got to do it yourself. And actually, I didn't do much other than organise. That's about all.
Right.
Different things.
Well, I'm just reading other things. You were president also of the Scott Creek School Committee.
Yeah.
You had children?
Yeah.
And life member of the Hills Table Tennis Association?
Actually, I started that.
You started it?
Yeah.
And you were secretary of the Hills Cricket Association?
Yeah.
So, very active life.
Football?
Football? What about football?
Yeah.
I haven't got that one down. Tell me about that.
Yeah, I started the football. And we only went for about 2 years because I never had enough people.
Scotts Creek team, yeah. Okay.
It was was mainly, you know, ring-ins all the time. In the end, we just couldn't keep going, mate.
And you were secretary of the Scott Creek branch of the United Farmers and Graziers.
Yeah.
For a long time. 24 years of that.
Yeah.
Can't you say to you? Real man of the hills.
MC the dancer for how long did how long? I started just before the war.
Mm.
And of course then there was a break. And then from there on until, oh, hell. Well, it would have been up until I nearly moved to Streaky Bay. Nobody else seemed to want to do it. And we had a dance every fortnight. All the Stirling and all Great and Bridgewater used to come down the creek,
right.
Because it was out of the way of the coppers and they could have a drink or two.
It was a slight drink.
Yeah, as I say, those were hectic days, really.
So how long did the dances go on for? How many years?
Well, they had one at Longwood every fortnight, and one at Scotts Creek every opposite fortnight.
That takes us from 1945 right up to when? When did they finish?
Let's see, it wouldn't be... I suppose it finished when I knocked off at the park, about 55.
55, okay.
No, it was at 75.
75?
Yeah.
Okay. And life changed. You mentioned Streaky Bay. Why did you mention that just then?
Well, one was at the park. We had 7 weeks holiday every year.
Yep.
And so I used to go, go around and go to Queensland or, and things up there, we're looking around for somewhere to retire.
Right.
And as I said to Oris, we'll go down over the west coast. So we took off and went down to, we got to Whyalla, and this, in the local rag was this house, it's Streaky Bay, for sale. Walk in, walk out, high carpets, TV, everything, a granny flat, and the caravan. $8,000 for hell, I'll have this. I didn't have a clue what the Streaky Bay was like, so anyway, we went down to Lincoln and then up the other side. You know, that's 3 or 4 days anyway. And then I get to Streaky Bay and went down the land house and I said, this house, he said that was sold yesterday.
Oh, dear,
so he took me for a run around. And this 10 acres in the township, one house, walk in, walk out, everything's there, even the bread and butter was still on the table. And he wanted $14,000. I'll think about this for a while. So. And then went up to his den, and when I come back, the place was sold. No. I said, offer him $8,000. He said, I want $10,000. So, that's good enough. So, when the house was a 30-foot crayfish, a big, with a 20 horsepower diesel in it. That all went with it. And he was a millionaire, this bloke, from over the other side of Mildura, on the other side of the river. He said, I want to come down and have a fortnight's fishing before I let the oven. Well, that's all right, so. He came down and he took the boat out. And when he came back, they must have even been tied up, because he used to bring some doctors and lawyers and all those sort of folks down with him, and they'd be on the ground. It'd make the hell of a noise in the town, you know. Anyway, they never tied the boat up properly, and it went adrift that night. And he got on the rocks on the other side of the bay, and he was going to get it back, but it never ever come back. And of course, the vandals were getting to it and all that sort of thing. Anyway, the landowner wanted to sell that separately, because it's real old, heavy hardwood boat. You'd get there, but it'd take a long time, sort of thing. Anyway, they only wanted $2,000 for it, so they had to take $2,000 off the price. Yes. I figured something like 10 acres. Grabbed the thing and started writing out my plans to cut it all up and so forth. And the house just was buying it as quick as I was getting it cut up. Anyway, in the end, I still had about 2 acres left. And it was 5 years later. And just because Horace. It was nice and all that, but it was too far from the friends and all that. So.
What year was this when you bought that place? Do you remember?
1973.
73,
okay, yeah. In the meantime, between 73 and when I retired in 75, Elvis Smith rented the thing off. Mm-hmm. I went down to sell it, and a woman wanted to buy it. She was standing outside that bloody door. And as I went out to the land agent, she said, "Oh, you're selling the place." And I said, "Oh, I'll put it on the market."
Yeah.
She said, "I'll go in and sign up for it." But she never put a deposit on it. So, Cat was the land agent, and he writes to me when the settlement's supposed to be on to sign this paper that I release him from the sale. No bloody way. So I went in the land agent's titles office. I told them all about sue the bastard. That's all they could tell me. Sue the bastard. He'll lose his license, and all his agents will get missed out and so forth. And I said, "Well, what's going to happen? How long will this take?" "Oh, a couple of years." I said, "What am I going to do in the meantime?" And I said, "I'm thinking about I'll face him and see what happens." So I I said, "Well, a couple of thousand, I might be able to sell it, time and all that." I said, "I reckon a couple of thousand might satisfy me, I'll sign it." So he had an answer for about 2 minutes, and then coming up with a check. So then the next boat done the same bloody thing. Well, I signed up for a subject to this, that, and something else, and everything worked out except they wouldn't lend him the money. So he was paying double the rent, and the agreement was that he would sign up, he would have half of the rent for a deposit when the time come to buy it. Or else, if he couldn't buy it, well, I got the lot. So I had nearly 12 months of rent, double rent.
Yeah.
I finished up with about $32,000 alongside it. I was only asking $25,000.
And what about you and Iris in these days and your family? Tell me about your home life.
scene there, when we went to Streamy. Oh, the kids are all really good.
How many children do you have?
Two.
Yeah.
Both in Gorma.
Right.
Brian, Barbara, she'd be about 63 now.
Right.
And Brian would be 58.
Barbara and Brian.
No, Brian's 60, so
right.
She must be 65.
Yes, okay. And you've a long life in the hills doing all these things. Did you retire and come to Goolwa? Was that the idea?
No, I retired and went to Streaky.
You did go to Streaky, right? Okay.
Yeah, oh yes, okay. I was there for 5 years.
Right, yep.
Had a hell of a good time. There's a different type of people over there.
Right, I've been there, I know what you mean. Yeah. And you were doing what, building and general work around the place?
Well, the housing trust, I don't know how the hell they found out. But, I'd done a few jobs on the house.
Yep.
Put another room on, so forth. And they come down with you, take on 50 houses and do the maintenance.
Right.
And I thought, yeah, that'd be all right. So I was doing hot water services every, because the water was that problem.
Yep.
Was, it's all right now.
Of course, yes.
But every hot water service on those houses, plus houses, every 12 months. Put a new element in.
Yeah, I can imagine. And you'd been, do we say you were the superintendent at Loftier Park? Is that how we describe you?
Well, I was everything.
Yeah, and he did that obviously for a long time, 20 years or more.
Yeah, 20 years.
And then after Streaky, retired to Goolwa?
I retired to Streaky and then I decided that we'd come back to Goolwa.
Right, okay.
Actually, I put up a shed there in 1950.
Right.
For the people that live in until they built their house.
Right, okay. So,
sleepy old town there.
Looking back on final areas, I think now, looking back on all those years, what a change in your life. The army changed so much.
Yeah.
How do you reflect on your military service now? What is your lasting impression? What effect did it have on you?
It has done me the world of good.
Yeah.
You were born in a little country town, you hadn't been anywhere, you never mixed with other people, like hardly going to work or anything like that. And you get thrown into a mob of blokes. I could have gone a lot further, I know, now. But at the time, I'm thinking to myself, I can't tell a bloke what to do because I don't really know what to do. So it's just taught me how to live with other people.